I'm here with Fred Lunsford today. It is March 17th at 4 o'clock. Thank you for taking the time to talk with me. Are you aware this is being recorded?
Thank you. Okay.
Are you aware this is being recorded?
Yes, I am.
Okay. When and where were you born?
I was born March 7th, 1925. In Marble, North Carolina here. I was about 2 miles from where I live now on Vengeance Creek.
And who raised you?
Ma'am?
Who raised you?
I was raised by my dad and mom, Purdy and Inez Lunsford. Okay. I was the oldest child of the family.
How many siblings did you have?
I had 2 sisters and 1 brother.
So tell me about your upbringing. What are some memories you have from growing up?
From growing up? Mm-hmm. Oh, mercy. Well, I grew up during the Depression days, the Great Depression, and in the 30s. I was born 25, so in the 30s, I remember most about it. I remember when I first started the school. I started the school as a little one-room schoolhouse on Vengeance Creek School. I went 2 weeks and they moved the school to Marble. They had an old bus they sent up here to get us kids, and it was an old truck made in, had a cover put on it, and an old wood truck, and my daddy wouldn't let me go. He wouldn't let me ride it, so I didn't go to school the first year. But I went the next year, and I was able to make 2 grades in 1 year. Because my dad taught me the multiplication table, and my mother taught me the ABCs and my letters, and I could read a few things. So I was ahead of the game when I went to school, so I got promoted into 2nd grade. So I went to school at Marble, and then went to Andrews and graduated from Andrews High School. In 1943, 80 years ago, this coming April, I graduated. And we grew up on that little mountain farm. But we grew about everything we eat. So I had plenty to eat during the Depression times. It was kind of rough, but had plenty to eat. I didn't go for anything lacking. And when I come out of the Army then in 1940, I was drafted into service in 43 after I graduated from high school. I went to Fort Knox, Kentucky and took my basic training. Went from there overseas. I married my sweetheart Gladys Lunsford, Gladys Green, she was, amazing soul, 79 years ago today, I got married. I went, after 3 days, I went back and went overseas and was gone 18 months. Went to Europe, it was the Battle of Normandy invasion, the Battle of the Bulge, and all of that, and came out in the 16th day of November 1945. And God called me to preach there soon thereafter. Well, actually, I realized the call, announced the call to preach when I was 20, 24 in 1949. And in 1950, I become pastor of Little Brush Town Baptist Church. And I pastored there 14 years. And then I become missionary for the Baptist Association and served that 26 years. And then I retired from that in 1990, I was 65 years old. And I started work with preaching revivals. I've done a lot of evangelistic work, and I've got a prayer ministry going now. And I just turned 89 years old the 7th of March, this week before last. So here I am. That's kind of my life's history.
So did you preach and do missionary work full-time?
I did, yeah, I did preach full-time. When I first went to pastor Little Brush Town Church, I went in 1950. I was preaching half-time there. I preached two Sundays a month, and I preached two Sundays a month at Friendship Church at Hiawassee, Georgia. And this is a story about, a little bit about your grandfather, Theodore Cook, because Luther Carringer went up to Mr. Cook's the day they elected me and said to him, says, "Mr. Cook," said, "we messed up today. Theodore and Belle didn't go to church at Little Brush Town then. They went to Maggie's Chapel." But Luther went up there and told Theodore that they messed up because he elected that Lunsford boy, and he couldn't preach a lick. And Theodore said to him, said, "Luther, you better be careful what you say about that boy. That boy is God's man, and God's got his hand on him. You better watch what you say." Luther told me that himself later on. And he says how wrong I was. Well, God blessed those 14 years in Little Brush Town in a tremendous way. I baptized into that fellowship during that 14 years in the neighborhood of 300 people. Wow. And I went full time. You asked about it. I worked on a job for 10 years of the 14 years, and then they elected me full time. And then in 1964, I took the missionary work and left.
So what was your relationship to Annie Bell? How did you know her?
What's that?
What was your relationship to Annie Bell? How did you know her?
I'm sorry, I didn't understand.
How did you know Annie Bell?
Oh, how did I know Annie Bell? Oh, well, I visited everybody in the community when I was pastor at Little Brush Town. And on Sunday night, I started hauling in young people to the church to Sunday night service and training union. And they didn't have services at Maggie's Chapel on Sunday night. So I went up to Theodore and Belle's, Annie Bell. I always call her Belle because that's what Theodore called her. I went up there and visit and invite the young people to come and go to church with me on Sunday night, and they agreed to do so. So I started hauling them in, and I'd go up there, and I'd get Alice and Alma and Bill and Francis, and take them down to church on Sunday night and bring them back. So that's how I got started knowing her. I didn't know her before then.
So how old do you think you were around then?
How old was I?
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's see. I would have been, I was 25 when I went over there. I'd have been about 27-year-old, somewhere along there, when I got to know her. And but before I got to know her, I knew her brother. I got acquainted with her brother. Her brother was John Davis, and he was a preacher. And I got acquainted with John, and John became a close friend of mine. He lived at Mineral Bluff, Georgia. But I got acquainted with Bill during that time, and then I can tell you more about when we talk about Bill. You want to go on and talk about Bill?
Yeah, you can.
Okay. Well, I was up there one day. Like I say, I was hauling in the children to church on Sunday night. Well, they got to wanting to come, some of them, to Sunday school on Sunday morning. So I started doing that, and I was up there one time just to visit. Oh, I did pastoral visits in the community, and I visited everybody. I went up there one day, and Theodore said, I want to ask you something. I said, okay. He said, do you reckon the people would have me and Bell as members at Little Brass Town and my family, my children? I said, why, yeah. Why, you want to leave Maggie Chapel? I said, yeah, I'm going to leave Maggie Chapel. Because Maggie Chapel was a Methodist and Baptist church combination. And the story he told me was that they needed to put a roof on the church. And they was going to need some money to put a roof on the church, and they wanted to put on a box supper where people would put together food boxes and cakes and stuff and bring it to the church, and they'd bid them off. Different people would bid on them, you know, buy them, and it raised money. And Theodore told him, said, if you do that, I'm not going to give a dime. But if you don't do it, I'll give a sizable amount of money to help come put a roof on the church. He said, I plan to give them $100. Well, $100 was a lot of money back then. But said when they did the box supper, they raised less than $100, about $90. And said, I wouldn't give them a dime. And he said, I'm not going to. And besides that, I'm going to go to Little Brass Town Church. I said, well, okay. Well, that'll be fine. We'd be glad to have you. So the next Sunday, I went up there and loaded the whole family in the car, clammed them in there, and they went down there and was in church and joined the church. And they become my members, and I visit them quite often then, and I've eaten at their home many times, and she was a great cook, and a big family and had a big long table. She'd pile the food on that table. And so one day, Mr. Cook got sick and got where he wasn't able to come, and I went up there and see him, and Belle told me, she said, I want to talk to you. She said, we're not able to go to church anymore, and Mr. Cook's not able to go, and said, we're going to just move our membership back to Maggie's Chapel. And Theodore said, now, Belle, let me tell you something. If you want to do that, you can do it. But old Theodore's not going to do it. I'm in where exactly I'm going to die. I've been the happiest at Little Bradstown Church of any place I've ever been in my life. And said, I'm not leaving. You can leave if you want to. She said, well, Mr. Cook, I didn't realize you felt that way about it. Said, well, now you know. And so Belle didn't join, didn't go leave either. And Theodore stayed there till he died, and then Belle did too. Belle stayed there long after Mr. Cook died. She was there, and was there a long time after I left. But she was a godly woman and a hard-working woman, raising all those children. I believe I'm right on this. I think she raised three children that was belonged to Theodore's first wife. She died back in 1918, I guess, during a big flu epidemic. And I believe two children. Theodore, I think, had 21 children all total. And had the two of them died, and there were three small ones. And then Theodore married Belle, and she raised the three. Plus, well, she had 16, and two of them died, and she raised 14 of them. So she raised 14 of her own, and three of us, first wife. So she was a hard-working woman. You got any questions you want me to answer about her?
What role did you see religion play in her life?
What role? What?
Did you see religion play in her life?
I didn't quite understand you, honey.
What role did you see religion play in Annie Bell's
life? Oh, religion. Mm-hmm. She was a very religious woman. She read the Bible a lot, and they'd have prayer meetings up there at their house, and I'd go. And she was very devoted to church. She loved her church, very committed to church. And committed and taught her children about God. And I remember when some of them were saved. I remember well when Frances was saved, because she had talked to me about Frances a lot of times, wanting me to pray for him that he might be saved. He was saved when Mr. Cook died. Then when he was saved. And I baptized some of them. I baptized Francis, I know. But I went to visit Belle one time after Mr. Cook died. I was not pastor there. Well, I don't. When I went to visit her, I wasn't pastor. I left in 64. And I don't know what year he died. I don't remember that, but I went to visit her, and I said, "How you doing, Miss Cook?" She said, I'm having a hard time. Said, "I thought I had a lot of friends. But," said, "after Mr. Cook died, they dropped me like a hot tater." I said, "Well, I'm here." Said, "I know you're here, but I'm not talking about you. I'm talking about my close friends." They said, "They don't come and see me. They used to come see me, but they don't anymore." But she told me about, I said, "How did you manage with them twins, twin babies?" I said, "You had other small children. How'd you manage them?" "Well," she said, "I'll tell you how it was." Said, Mr. Cook would go in the field and had to plow the land and cultivate the corn and the tobacco. They had a tobacco allotment, and they sold tobacco and get their cash crop in the fall. And said, Mr. Cook would take Helen and fix the place, fix the way she, holes in his overall bib, and put her in the overall bib and put her legs, feet through that hole, and carry her in, through the field, plowing the land, and I said, he took care of Helen and I took care of Bill. And said, that's the way we raised her. And said, she had children and went to Oregon, and she was always wanting me to pray for her. She'd name them over them, tell me which one she wanted me to pray for, and tell me what's going on, some of them. And it wasn't a living for the Lord like it's ought to. So, she said, but she would have me to pray for them. And she invited me, and one time we had an old preacher to preach at Little Brass Town by the name of John Green. He was a great old preacher from over and lived on the edge of Georgia. And I went and got him and brought him to my house and kept him up for 2 weeks and let him teach me the Bible and let him preach on Sunday. So we went home with Belle and Theodore for Sunday dinner. And like I say, a big long table, and all of them children gathered around the table. And Uncle John, old man John, preacher, sat at the end of the table. And I was sitting over here beside him. And Theodore was all the way at the other end of the table. And Uncle John, he looked over the table, and he said, "Would you please pass me the sweet potatoes up here?" And this was funny to me. And Bell, she said, "Mr. Preacher Green," said, "Oh, we don't have no sweet potatoes." "Well, what's that down there?" "A big platter." "Oh," and she said, "well, that's cornbread." What she had done, she had a pan where she put her cornbread batter in and made corn sticks. And it was in the stick form. And it looked like baked sweet potato to him. Mm-hmm. And she said, "Well, that's cornbread." Well, I want some of it. I was looking for bread, and I never saw it on that style before. So she laughed about poor old John, thinking that cornbread was sweet baked sweet potatoes. And she liked to have a little fun. Long she was, she never lost her sense of humor. And I went up there one time to visit, and Theodore was working in the field. And I said, visited a few minutes, and I said, you're busy with your cooking and dinner and stuff. No, you're going to stay and eat dinner. You're going to stay and eat dinner. I said, come on in the kitchen and sit down here. I want to talk to you. So I went in and sat down. She said, I want to talk to you about Theodore. I said, is Theodore sick? No. Said he's crazy. Said he's crazy. I said, crazy? Yeah. Why do you think he's crazy? Said what he wants to do. He don't, all he wants to do is work and go to church. He don't want to do nothing else. He don't want to have no fun at all. He wants to work and go to church. That's all he wants to do. I said, well, okay, what do you want me to do about it? I said, I want you to pray for him and talk to him. I said, talk to him, tell him that tell him what. I said, you want me to tell him what you said? No, don't tell him I said she's crazy. Don't do that. But just find out what's going on with him. I said, well, okay, I'll see what I can do. And I talked to him one day about it. I said, Theodore, what do you do for recreation? He said, I don't have time. I've got a big family to raise, and I've got a Lord to serve. And I serve my God. And I said, well, don't you think you need to take a little time off once in a while and have a little leisure time? I said, I think it would be good if you this one day took off and took Belle and went fishing or something. I knew Belle liked to fish. He said, you think I ought to do that? I said, yeah, I do. I think you ought to do that. Well, I'll just do it. So he did. Him and Belle went fishing. I don't know where they went or what they done. I think they went out to Tellico River. And it was gone about all day. They come back, and next time I was up there, I said, I didn't mean for you to tell him to take me to the mountains and where. Said, he about killed me. Said, I don't want to do that no more. But that was her. She was a godly person. And her brother John was equally as good as she was. But she raised a great family of people, the children that I knew well, and most of them I knew, not all of them, but that I knew real well. But most of them I knew. And Frank was the same age as me. He was born, his birthday I believe was in June or July. And mine's in March. That's the only difference in our age. But Rob was older than me, and I don't know how they come in there. But now Bill and Helen, I think's about 81, I guess. They are, I believe.
I'm not sure.
Anything else?
Did you ever hear anything about Rob's time in the military?
Rob?
Mm-hmm.
Not much. I know he come to church at Little Brass Town some way back. But I did not know Rob as well. I knew he was a good man. a godly man. I know that much. But outside that, I was not around him a lot. I've been around Francis and Bill and Arvel more than any of the others, I guess. Excuse me.
How was Annie Bell as a mother?
How was she as what?
As a mother, like with her family.
I think she was a good mother. Mm-hmm. She loved her children, and one thing about it, in the fall when she'd go in the field and help cut the tobacco, and they'd bring it and put it in the barn and cure it, and then she'd, whenever it got in case, when the weather was damp enough so they could hand it off, they went and she stripped it off and put it in hands and packed it down and took it to the market, and they'd get their money out of it. And she wanted to get that money out of that tobacco for one thing, to buy school clothes for the children. When they marketed that tobacco, they brought the money back and gave it to her. And she managed it, and she spent that money on her children. And she spent many of a night awake caring for her children when they'd be sick. And like I say about her, she repeatedly, I believe every one of them, she would come to me and ask me to pray for them. That they wasn't, they was, had physical problems or sick, or they was not living for the Lord, or something. She was always wanting me to pray for them. She loved her children. She loved her family. And she was very devoted to her husband, very devoted to him. Whatever he said, that's the way it was.
Do you know how old she was when she got married?
Huh?
Do you know how old she was when she got married?
I believe they said she was 16. Mm-hmm. She was young. Mm-hmm. Like I say, his first wife had died and left three small children. And I don't know how they met. I don't know that. But I know where he lived on Tellico River, working for a lumber company out there. I don't know how he met Belle, but I believe they told me she was 16. I'm not sure about that, but that's, she was young. I know that much.
Mm-hmm. Did she have any hobbies that you knew about?
No, not that I know of, except she loved her snuff. She liked to dip snuff. Mm-hmm. That was her pleasure, mm-hmm. dipping snuff.
Did you ever know her to pull any pranks on people?
Pull pranks on people? Mm-hmm. Well, no, not except on Theodore. She'd pull pranks on him sometimes. She'd laugh at him and told me one time that he was in the field working, and he come home for dinner, and she hid from him. He couldn't find her. And she laughed about that, said he, I don't know where she hid, but she hid from him. But that's the only time I know that she pulled a prank on anybody except, it might on her children, I don't know. But I know she did on him.
Did you ever notice any impacts on this area from any of the wars throughout your lifetime? Did you ever notice any impacts from the wars throughout your lifetime on this area?
Past what?
So the wars throughout your lifetime, did you ever see their impact on this area at all?
Impact? Mm-hmm. Of what?
Like maybe how people reacted to it or responded to it? Or changes in the area?
Oh, well, you talking about Belle?
Her too, but just in, I guess, the area in general too.
The area in general about the, you talking about what made the impact?
Mm-hmm. Any of the wars or even the Great Depression or...
The war?
Yeah.
Yeah, it made a tremendous impact, I think, on the area. One thing I talk about that quite often, I grew up on, like I say, on this creek, and there were, during the war, when the war broke out, I was a junior in high school. When Pearl Harbor was bombed and the war was declared, it wasn't nothing unusual to go up and down the creek here and hear people praying in the chimney corners or in the field or in the woods or in the house even. Houses, people praying, it was amazing how that people prayed. And the people in this area really rallied to the war effort, like everybody else in the nation in World War II. They rallied to defend our country. And even when I went, I was working on a logging job on Snowbird that summer. I got a job over there that summer and I got my call to go. And they came to me and told me that was a defense job, that I could get a deferment if I wanted to because of timber they were cutting went to Norfolk, Virginia, for shipbuilding. And they could give me a deferment. And I said, no, I don't want a deferment. I want to go on and do my duty for my country. And that was the attitude that the people of this area had. So it made an indelible impact on the people of this area. And now, I've been preaching the gospel over 70 years. And I've preached in most states, and about every county in North Carolina. And what I've seen happen is not good. I've seen people going in different churches, dropping off, people not committed to the cause. And that's sad, because there's got to be a turning around. I believe with all my heart. And I think war makes an impact on now different wars make different kinds of impact. But for people who are Christians that know God, it causes them to get closer to God. But people that have no regards for God at all, it's different. Sometimes it drives them farther away. So it did make a tremendous impact on the area, I think. At least World War II did. Mm-hmm. And the Vietnam War, of course, you know about it. It was just unnecessary. One thing about the Cook family, Belle, Theodore, and all her children had been devoted Christians, as I said. Now, there's more times than one when I needed help, I didn't have to ask for it. And they knew I needed something. They'd be ready to help me. One time I went down to the store, and your Grandpa Francis was in there then, before he got disabled. I bought a little bag of nails. And I saw him when I paid him for the nails at the cash register. I just saw him do something. I didn't know what he was doing. But when I got in the truck, and when I got home and started to get using my nails that I got for something, I run my hand down in there, and there was a $50 bill in there. Francis had put a $50 bill in there. And next time I was down there, I went to talk to him about it. He said, "I wanted to give you that because it means a lot to me." One time Gladys was sick in the hospital, and Frank showed up and gave me some money, helped me with it, and on, repeatedly. And for Preacher Ham Culver, they helped Preacher Ham a lot. So they're godly people. I love the whole family inside. It mean much to me.
Is there anything specific about Abel that stood out to you?
That stood out to me?
Mm-hmm.
Well, about her?
Maybe her personality or her appearance, anything?
Well, she was a very friendly person. She had a good personality. She was very friendly, kind, and that's the best way I could describe her. She was kind and good, and yet at the same time, she was humble. But she was strong. She had a strong will. Had to be strong to do what she done.
Did you ever hear anything about moonshine in this area?
And hear anything about what?
Moonshine in this area.
I didn't understand that.
Did you hear anything about moonshine in this area or anyone's involvement with it?
No. Okay. No.
So that's all the questions I have. Is there anything else you would like to add?
Well, I feel really greatly honored to have the opportunity to talk about a friend like her and Theodore. They made an indelible impression on me and my life. As a young preacher, they contribute a lot to me, and so I thank you for allowing me to have a little input in what you're doing, because it's like this. When I left Little Brushtown Church in 1964. To become the missionary for the area. There were two women in that church that come to me and told me there was no sense in doing what I was doing. That I needed to stay at Brushtown. That they didn't want me to go. They loved me and they didn't want me to go leave. And that they simply said the church will go downhill when you leave. And it was Daisy Myers, Marion Myers' wife, and Belle, the two women. And I told them both the same thing. I said, well, if I'm any way qualified to do the missionary work that they've asking me to do, that you two, you people are to blame for it. And he said, how in the world are we to blame for it? I said, you made me what I am. You made me what I am. And the people in Little Brushtown Church made me what I am. Because when I went there, I had never pastored a church. I was 24 years old. And I didn't know a thing in the world about pastoring church. Nothing. But them people in Little Brushtown got under me and they supported me and they prayed for me. There's no telling how many prayers Bill Cook prayed for me. I know her and Theodore both prayed for me. They told me they did, and I know they did. And that made me what I am. And I'm going to ask you a question. Are you a Christian? Mm-hmm. You saved? You born again? Huh?
I got saved when I was 8.
Huh?
I've been saved since I was 8.
You've been saved?
Mm-hmm.
Where do you go to church?
New Martins Creek Baptist.
New Martins Creek. Well, that's where Francis went.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, that's wonderful. That's great.
Yeah.
I asked everybody that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not just picking on you.
No, you're okay.
I asked everybody that to come here. There's a girl, a woman. I have a lifeline. And she, it comes through Cherokee. And she comes every once in a while to check the lifeline. And she come in one day and she checked the lifeline and got it all done. She started to leave and I asked her the same question. I said, are you a Christian? Been saved? No, I haven't. I said, well, let's sit down over there and let's talk a little bit. She sat down right on that chair right there. Before she left, she was saved. And I asked everybody that comes here. Tony brought a man up here from Marietta to help do some work around here. He was up yonder working, and I went up there where he was working and asked him if he's a Christian. He said no. And up there at the barn, he was saved. So that's my policy. Mm-hmm. And I appreciate you coming in. And you give Francis my love and my regard when you see him.
I will. And thank you for talking to me. I'll turn this off.